Hey there, Rassholes. This is Brent, and you're about to listen to a super special episode of WrestleMania with our guest Liz Savage. And Brad introduced me to Liz. We don't know her, but we talked over Skype. So if that's why the sound sounds a little bit echoey, it's because of Skype. She was in Los Angeles.
Fascinating.
She is fascinating. So she's a former pro wrestler, still involved with the business, writes for betwrestling.com. And
that's betwrestling.com.
That's blackentertainmentwrestling.com. You'll find out. So this is this episode.
Yeah, there's a whole. It's a good interview, by the way. I mean, we talk about stalkers. We talk about the
right at the beginning. Yeah. We don't even mess around. We stalkers right from the beginning.
The current product. We get some stories of independent promotions from the East Coast and from we talk about the differences between independent wrestling on the East and West. So yeah, it was a very, very good interview.
So here it is, our interview with Liz Savage. Thanks, Rassholes.
In a world where everyone knows pro wrestling is fake,
it's still real to me, damn it.
Two stand-up comedians are willing to go against the crowd. They don't know everything, but they are entertaining.
And you two jabronis don't even have enough class to introduce yourself?
They are Brent Terhune and Brad Scott.
It doesn't matter what your name is!
And this is WrestleMania.
Cool, so our guest today is Liz Savage. I know your name, some people call you Beth too, is that correct?
Well, that's what people who are my real life friends call me.
We'll call you Liz.
People
then.
In the wrestling industry call me Liz or Liz Savage. Yes.
Did you just pull off that man's mask?
I think I just broke kayfabe off, right off the top. I'm sorry.
You can start over. Yeah. If you want. People call me. People only my real friends call me by Beth. So okay. This is how we disseminate whether or not someone calls me Beth or not. You know, I mean, yes, that's my name. Elizabeth is my name. So either or is my name, but I go by Liz Savage in wrestling.
Cool. And where are you calling from today, by the way?
I live in Los Angeles, California.
But you're originally from Pine Bush, New York, is that correct?
Can we not put that on there? Why are you, that's not what I bill myself as or anything else.
Oh, I just was reading a bio online, so yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever.
Where is the bio from?
I think it was like Wrestlepedia. I mean, it's the quick okay. Google. Yeah, whatever you don't want to put on here. I was just looking online.
I mean, you can, I guess. I guess you could put that on there. It doesn't really matter. Just so you know, I don't know if you've how much research you've done. I've had someone impersonating and stalking me for the last 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's been a really huge thing because they've reached out to people who I only know through work, who I don't have on my Facebook or my real life thing, and they've been making both Beth and Liz Savage profiles and going online as me and writing sexist, racist, crazy fucking shit.
Well,
so
that's crazy. I did not see any of that.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, we can absolutely talk about that because it just started happening again like last week. So that's why I'm a little like,
No.
Yeah, surprise, it's been us. More than me, but that's definitely something I should be talking about.
It was us, Austin. Yeah, so where... How did this start?
How did you find out that there was someone impersonating you? And what was the thought... When you first saw not only that there was someone who created a fake account, but the stuff that they were putting out there, what was your first thought?
Well, I didn't know there was someone impersonating me, and that was what was really bad, is I was working as a suicide prevention counselor, mm-hmm. and my boss told me, like, hey, I got to talk to you. Can I show you something? And showed me printed out emails. And screenshots of a profile that was made of me using my current profile picture, using my real name, using all of my information, including my hometown, where I'm from, they literally copied every bit of personal information down to the fact that they put where I worked, even though that wasn't on my Facebook profile.
Wow.
And they went into groups of parents of suicidal children and parents of children with different issues and stuff like that, and started posting as me, using my name, my real name, my real photos, and started just like tearing these people apart. And this was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So that was the first time I found out that that was going on, but it had been going on for over a year at that point, and I just didn't know about it.
That's crazy that that would happen. In any industry, it's not good, but especially that one where it's suicide prevention. I mean, that's terrible. Have you found out who it was?
So what happened is whoever's doing this to me is really smart about it, because they're not using their own account, their accounts, to report me. They're using other, they're pissing off other people, so other people will contact my jobs and tell them that I'm this or I'm that and I shouldn't be working for them. Because you know how the internet loves to get all like up in arms about everything these days.
Of course.
So that's been one of the things that they've used to their power, is getting people to rally behind them. One of the fake profiles that runs with the fake profiles of my name is named Chrissy Jones, and she's always the rabble rouser. She always belongs to all of these groups that the fake profile belongs to, and gets people amped up against me in those groups, saying that this is me. So that, I assume, is the person who created the profile.
And this was 3 years ago. And you said
it started 3 years ago. It popped up again last year, and I had to write an article for HailMaryJane.com where I was working at the time. I had a podcast at the time as well, so we spoke about it on our podcast briefly, about how I was getting stalked and how another profile had been created of me going all over the internet saying racist things. And it actually, you know, didn't seem to understand that I was, you know, one of the social media people for HailMaryJane.com. So I was also seeing the social media stuff that was being posted. And then other people started sending me screenshots. But what they had done is they had started to friend through the fake profile every single guest I had on my radio show. Can you imagine if someone did that to you guys? Like, they friended every guest you had on your show and then tried to, like, make you guys look bad?
We just wish somebody would friend us, to be honest. So when they befriended these people with the radio show, what were they sending them afterwards?
They were posting racist pro-Trump shit on all of their pages.
Now, and were some of these people that you'd had on the show that they had contacted people that you had known, like, so that...
None of these. Well, I'd never known them before in my lives. I didn't have any of them on my Facebook. I'd never met any of them before. The only contact I had with them, for the most part, was either asking them to be on our show or interviewing them on our show. Most of these people, like some of these people, we even just had on over phone call, where they didn't come to our studio, so we didn't even meet them in person. So they had no idea who I really was. They had no idea what my real profile was. They were just friending it based off me having them on my show.
So to these people, it looked like a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're absolutely. Like, oh, she seems so different when we were interviewing, but apparently she's the first person in line to build the wall.
Exactly. So, you know, my boss already knew what was going on, so he let me write an article about it, and he wasn't having it. So, you know, that worked out really well. And now, you know, I work for a pro wrestling site. And so, like, with us, it's like the person I work with and work for, you know, it's like he knows me better than anyone. He's actually someone who, when I was wrestling, we wrestled each other. So he knows that if anything comes our way, like, we're just going to shoot it down and laugh at them. But it's just really, really tiresome being stalked online and harassed. And I know I'm not the only female to deal with this kind of stuff. A few years back, a bunch of the women who were involved in independent wrestling changed their phone numbers, from what I understand, because someone was getting a hold of our phone numbers and pretending to be a promoter basically just to harass us over the phone.
Do you find that it's mostly women that are victims of this, or is it across the board men and women?
Across the board, it's probably 75% women who are getting harassed online, online like this, you know?
Yeah.
And it's it's really upsetting because, you know, I don't do anything that I think would justify someone doing this to me online. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of what I do right now is just, you know, writing about wrestling. I occasionally still write about social justice stuff, but for the most part, I'm just, you know, taking in the wrestling scene again and falling back in love with it. And, you know, I started last year in September writing for betwrestling.com, and I write a lot of stories about the realities of wrestling, you know, head injuries and no retirement fund and, you know, what it's like to be body shamed and, you know, things such as that, like real topics. So whatever these people, whatever their agenda is to harass me, they're not just harassing me. They're actually harassing a couple other people who I know. And none of us are even remotely involved in any of the things that we were involved in the past. So it's kind of funny. And we really don't have many ties except for certain things. So when we do get to the bottom of who's doing this, it's going to be interesting.
Do you find that it stems from wrestling or social justice things that people are trying?
I think it's more from the social justice thing, because the person who I know who also has been harassed by the same accounts, that's where I know her from, okay, is from the social justice world. And what's interesting is we're very different. She's more of a liberal kind, and I'm more of the very left-leaning anarchist kind. So we're very different. We have worked together, but we have different, like, you know, ideals overall. I mean, I think she's a good person. You know, I have no issue with her. But what was interesting is, like, she actually went to the police about this. I didn't think anything was going to come of going to the police, so I didn't bother doing it. She went to the police. She got a court order for Facebook to hand over the accounts associated with all of the names of the people that have been harassing her and have been harassing me, because they've been because some of these accounts have been harassing her as well. Mm-hmm. So we figured we'd get to the bottom of this, right? So the judge gave them a court order to hand over the names and the IP addresses and any other accounts that are associated with these IP addresses. And Facebook has not complied, and it's been almost a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you would think that, I mean, it's court ordered. Why wouldn't you do that?
Facebook, you know, that's what they like to talk about, is how they do, like, the court-ordered stuff, they'll do it right away, and that definitely hasn't happened.
Well, not to mention the fact that Facebook, you know, has no problem taking down a picture of a breast cancer woman, yeah, who's shirtless in a matter of days.
I told somebody to GFY one day, and I got banned for a month off Facebook.
Oh, my God.
That's dumb.
Have you guys ever considered that this might all be just big Cass?
It might be. It might be, because, you know, when I did at one time work where he came from at Johnny Rod's school. So maybe I was a rude ass bitch to him one day back in like 2007 when I was last there, 2008, whenever it was. Actually, no, I think it was probably like 2010. It was probably the year before I moved out here. Because I do come from New York, so I've spent, you know, time there, and maybe I was rude to him when he was a greenhorn, and this is his revenge, who knows? I am tiny and loud like Enzo.
Kiss.
Maybe he just doesn't have a small, loud
Kiss, you're setting up fake social media profiles, Kiss! that's obviously awful, but I have to imagine you face some level of the same kind of harassment, because you do have the audacity to not only be a professional wrestling fan, but also be a female. So have you dealt with a lot of it's a very male-driven fan base. It's a very almost – still a large percentage that have the kind of barbaric way of thinking. And have you dealt with any of that, any of the harassment to you?
Yeah, of course I do. You know, it's just like in the gamer scene where people talk about Gamergate. That, you know, getting harassed by the guys is like a regular. I'm always asked, well, what do you know about wrestling? Why do your opinions matter? It's like, well, I have, you know, at least 35 years of wrestling fan experience, and I had 9 years experience in the ring and around the ring, and I worked for over 30 promotions and was an extra on WWE. And you're asking me what experience I have from your mom's couch. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It's the guys who are sitting there asking you what business you have talking about wrestling, but first they have to wipe the Cheeto crumbs off of their fingers before they type.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was definitely interesting because I left the wrestling world for a little while. You know, I got a little jaded by it, as independent wrestling can do. You know, I was raised up on the Northeast, spent most of my time working there, moved out here, wasn't a huge fan of the scene out here. It was very, very different. So I got more involved in other stuff and I had planned on moving back home, but that didn't happen. I've been in California for 7 years now and I started to catch little bits and pieces of wrestling what's on TV now and seeing a lot of the people who we came up with in the independents are now on TV. And that started to re-spark my interest, being able to watch people who I think are great people on the television who work their asses off to get there. You know,
what was the biggest difference that you noticed from the New York independent scene and the LA scene? What was the differences and what was the differences that you didn't care for?
Well, the number one difference is no one likes to travel here. No one wants to travel unless they're getting flown somewhere, it seems. Like, everyone thinks everything is really far away. And I come from the school of thought where we drive 5 hours to work 10 minutes and then 5 hours home. So it was really like a little discombobulating finding out that very few people traveled together. And it was mostly the guys. You know, a second thing that I've noticed when I got here, first right off the bat, is pretty much every woman who I met was attached to one of the guys. And I was pretty much told that if I wanted to get booked, I had to attach myself to one of the guys in a relationship. And I didn't really feel that was my kind of perspective on how the industry should work. So I didn't. And I wasn't really interested in playing those kind of games. You know, also, a lot of the promotions here don't really use women. It seems like AWS uses women the most. I haven't actually even gone to their shows. I'm actually looking forward to checking out their next women's show, but most of the shows that use women based on, you know, who they're dating or who they're paying, like what school are you still paying to go to, you know, because all of the schools here have gym fees that people continue to pay long after they've graduated. So, you know, a lot of people get their bookings based on that. And it was just very hard because there's not like, it's not like on the East Coast where there's a huge scene that you could drive around in. You know, like on the East Coast, you could work in New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New Jersey all in the same weekend. Where here, it's like you're driving, maybe there's a couple promotions in Vegas. There's some promotions upstate. There's some stuff in San Diego. But it's all a 2 to 5 hour drive and nobody wants to do that. So it's a lot less. Where people on the East Coast are driving all over to do shows, people here aren't doing it as much. So It seems like there's less mobility, so there's less chance of you being booked in other places, you know, because they don't really seem to have people traveling in a lot unless you're a name.
You talked a little bit on your article. It's called Will Work for Peanuts on BetWrestling.com. Yes. It's kind of – we're talking about that same stuff that you talked about there. What's the process of – starting as an independent wrestler?
Well, it all depends on where you start, you know? I mean, everyone should start in some sort of way that either they're either in a school or they're learning as they start. You shouldn't expect to be in the ring. You can't expect to do a show your first year of wrestling, even second year of wrestling, as far as being a wrestler. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be able to be trained to be a referee very quickly. But to be a good referee, that's going to take time. If you have a background in acting or that kind of stuff, as I did, I had a background in improv and stage acting when I came to wrestling. So I was quickly trained as a wrestling manager. But I worked a lot of, you know, shows in the middle of nowhere. I worked a lot of school shows. I worked for free as a manager just to get booked, just to get my name out there. But because I had already had the acting skill in there, that helped me tremendously. If I didn't have that kind of skill, I don't think I would have been able to get the bookings and reception I did, you know? And at that time, I was also involved in a wrestling school. And the first wrestling school I went to, they made me sign a contract with them, which I thought was kind of shady. And they didn't let their wrestlers work at outside companies for 2 years, without their permission. And I was like, well, I already work at outside companies as a manager. I'm already, you know, like I already was started to train as a manager, and this is what I've been doing. And they were like, oh, that's fine. But when I started going to this wrestling school, I realized they didn't really respect women, that, you know, everything that they were teaching was going really slow. And granted, they've put out a lot of good wrestlers, but the place just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, I ended up moving. So I asked to be let out of my contract, which I was. That left me looking for a new wrestling school, but that also left me with other options when I moved of working other places so I could, you know, continue managing, continue building from there. The wrestling school I ended up that I was going to go to, that was basically just a training camp with a bunch of people who are already trained, a couple of trainers, and rotating people coming through to help us out. So that ended up shutting down real quick after I moved up to Connecticut, because we lost a wrestler who was involved in it, but we didn't lose him at that event. He died at an event in Rhode Island. So, you know, that camp just kind of shut down.
Was it like a botched spot or?
A botched spot killed somebody. Yeah. Like, it's fucked up. It happened back in 2004, 2005. I'm pretty sure it was 2005. A kid named Dan Spider Quirk. Everyone called him Spider. He was like beloved on the Connecticut wrestling scene. He was a really nice kid, only 23 years old, was in a wrestling match with a kid called the High Life Kid, who was barely trained, who decided to do a top rope move and jumped off the top without Dan knowing it was coming. And he landed on top of him. Dan hit his head, bounced off the concrete because there were no ringside pads or anything. Nobody was prepared for this high dive this kid decided to take, this untrained kid decided to take, and, you know, Dan died on the way to the hospital. So it was one of the most horrifying things that, like, I had to help people come to terms with and deal with, like, that night and beyond. We had a wrestling show that was only 2 weeks away that turned into a memorial show. It was supposed to be a great, big, fun show with Matt Hardy. Instead, it was a big, sad, you know, time where it was just a lot of people coming together and grieving. So, you know, that put a damper on us, on us practicing for a while. So, you know, I just kept with managing. And whenever I got opportunity to go before a show and practice things in the ring, practice, you know, taking bumps, practice, you know, chain wrestling, I took that opportunity. And because I'm 5'2", the guys like to use me as a crash test dummy. So I got to learn to take a lot of big moves because they would say, hey, I want to try this. And you're lighter than the guys. You know, let's do this. So I would learn how to take moves. I would learn how to take big bumps and stuff like that as a manager, putting in my time before the show. And then from there, I kept working until I could find a place where I could call home and actually work on learning how to wrestle properly.
What was your role as a manager? Was it, do you play heel better, a face better, or is it just kind of whatever you're needed?
90% of the time I was a heel manager. And it's funny because there's very few places that I will ever, ever, ever be over as a face. My hometown fair is one of the few places I have been a face, which is really funny. For the most part, I'm a heel, and to the point of, you know, I didn't really wrestle that much. I managed dozens and dozens of people, lots of champions. I was the manager of champions. Pretty much if I managed you, you were going to get a belt at some point. And what was funny about that is I got booked on a Jersey All Pro women's show. And at that point I was wrestling, and they had first asked me if I wanted to wrestle in one of the opening matches. And I said, yeah, I'd love to. That sounds great. But it was in fact Frank who was doing the booking, who I had a relationship with. So
the guy's name was Frank.
Yeah, it wasn't Frank. It was some other guys who had bought the Jersey All-Pro women's division. Like, they had basically, they had paid to, like, run the shows. Mm-hmm. And they booked me to wrestle first. And then they called me back, like, a couple days before and asked me if I could get a ref outfit, if I could referee. And I said, well, I was like, is this going to be, like, a work referee? Because, like, that's not really going to work, you know? I mean, it's like, people know me and they're like, oh, no, 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 don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And it was like, so that I figured they had some sort of gimmick planned because like me as a ref did not make any sense in New Jersey. And I was like, okay. So I get to the show late and because there's horrendous New Jersey traffic as always. And all the fans are already outside lined up and there's no other way into the building except for the front door. So I had to walk past everyone and everyone's like taking pictures of me and or telling me to fuck off and, you know, just being their typical selves towards me. And I go in and I change into the ref costume and everybody there just stops and looks at me. And all the girls are like, you are not a referee. To the point of like Sarah Del Rey was like, I was supposed to ref the main event. And Sarah Del Rey is like, yo, she is not reffing the main event. She will draw away from what we're doing. And that's not cool. And I agreed. I did not want to ref the main event. And the promoters just kept saying to me, they're like, you're nobody. Nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows who you are. And I was like, maybe you guys don't know who I am, but I can guarantee the audience does. Mm-hmm. So I was announced as the referee for the first match. And I got booed so badly during the first match. I felt terrible for the girls who were wrestling in it because they got no heat whatsoever because the entire time the crowd just kept screaming to get me out of the ring. Mm-hmm.
You're like Roman refs.
Yeah, I mean, like, I had more heat than Roman Reigns does on Monday Night Raw. Like, it was like, that's how bad they wanted me to leave. They were like, oh, no. You know, the second match I reffed, we used it to our advantage because it was kind of funny. I reffed a match between Allison Danger and Ariel, and that was a great match because, you know, Danger kept yelling at me that she was going to beat me if I didn't go along with what she did, and I'm scared of Danger, so that, you know, I just did what Danger wanted me to. I won't lie.
did those bookers call an audible, or did they write it out with you being a ref?
They just wrote it out. They just didn't say anything of it ever. It was never spoken of again. Like, you know, it was like that we fucked up. Like, Fat Frank cracked up after the first match because he was there. He was like, why are you a referee? I was like, ask those jabonis that. I was like, yeah.
Can you tell us about Fat Frank? Because I'm a fan of anybody that just, that seems like a character, Fat Frank.
Fat Frank, he was a character. He was the original promoter for Jersey All Pro Wrestling. He passed, I think it's 2 years ago now. Mm-hmm. He was an amazing person. He loved his pictures of barbecue. We used to share pictures and meet back and forth when we were cooking. And he used to take his kids to wrestling shows a lot outside of his own wrestling shows. He came to the show, all the shows we put on for Awesome Pro Wrestling, which ran out of Seaside, New Jersey, which were family-friendly shows. So I had a lot of respect for him. I have a lot of respect for wrestling promoters who, you know, have respect for the business. Mm-hmm.
Was it an honest nickname or like a, you know, like, oh, he's so skinny, we call him Fat Frank, or was he fat?
Oh, no, he was fat.
Oh, that makes it so much better.
It's like a big guy named Tiny.
If it would have been an ironic nickname, I would have been so disappointed because, especially New Jersey, right now, I have basically Tony Soprano in my head right now, but just booking matches.
He kind of was like Tony Soprano in a t-shirt. Nice. You know, because people loved and respected him so much, they were terrified to cross him. Because they all wanted to get booked on Jersey All Pro. Because that was the hot, at the time, that was definitely the hot show in New Jersey. They were drawing massive crowds where most people could barely get 50 to 200 people in a building, they could draw 2,000 to 4,000 without a problem. Mm-hmm.
With your manager character, how did you go about forming your character? Because you said you're an actor, and what was your character essentially?
Well, my first time managing actually was at Jersey All Pro. I did a dark match, and I was terrified, and the guys didn't want to work with me, so that didn't work out too well. So from there, it kind of developed. I met the diabolical manager, Joe Rules, who took me under his wing to teach me the ways of managing a stable. I became his co-director. I was the co-commissioner for the United Wrestling Coalition, which is a wrestling company also out of New Jersey, which that gave me my really gave me my start in learning how to manage properly because I was just thrown into managing a heel stable alongside of Joe Rules. I was basically his assistant. and we had to make sure that our champions kept their belts. So I got opportunity to work with Reckless Youth and Don Montoya and, you know, other up-and-coming wrestlers, but they really gave me the solid foundation of what I should be doing at ringside, how, if I interfere in a match, how I should do it and when I should do it and how to make it make sense, you know. And the problem is most managers that you see on the scene who are given any respect are men. I wanted to change that, and I did change that. I built an empire for myself across the Northeast, managing, you know, some really legitimate people all over and, you know, helping them build names for themselves, helping me build a name for myself as someone who could bring champions and find the talent that, you know, companies needed to make their company better.
We use the term manager as like, you know, and kind of an in-ring role, but you mentioned keeping your guys, you know, your wrestlers with the belts. Is that like a backstage thing to your kind of fighting for them to carry a championship?
In a way, I mean, when I say manager, it depends on the company and who I was working with. Some people I was just their in-ring manager, and other people I brought along with me when I got bookings. If I was asked to get booked somewhere, I would ask if I could bring them with me, you know, and a lot of the people, they brought me with them, you know, so it went hand in hand, you know, and I got to manage people who, you know, a lot of people who I worked with were brand new. They were greenhorns. One for good instance is Fala, who's now on Impact Wrestling. And I started managing him at a promotion called Awesome.
Is he Samoan?
He's from the islands, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to give up which of the islands he's come from.
Well, you know what? But I have a feeling in wrestling, he's Samoan, no matter which island it is, that he's a Samoan.
He's a cousin to the Rock.
He is definitely a Pacific Islander. I will tell you that. Yes. Because during his campaign to become a champion, you know, we talked about this. We talked about his, you know, role and him becoming a real warrior. And when he won that belt, he decided he was going to go to the islands and come back fiercer than ever. And he did. And we showed, you know, New Jersey a whole new side of him. And from there, you know, he didn't need me after a while. He's a power of his own. You know, he has learned to be, you know, to look around him and know what's going on and not have to have someone watching his back because of his training, because of his warrior skills. And to see him make it as far as to make it to TV, that makes me incredibly happy. The day that he announced that that Impact had picked him up, I was like, this is awesome. This is awesome. You know, and I feel a lot of gratitude that I got opportunity to work with a lot of these guys when they were new in the industry, when I was, you know, starting to come up in the industry a few years in, and, you know, we developed things together. So he was just one of many. I worked with other people who are still wrestling. Some aren't. I worked with a couple of legends, which I think is awesome. And every time I work with a legend, I end up being a babyface manager and everybody loves me. What Even if it's Brutus the Barber Beefcake and he's cutting off someone's hair, I guess it just makes them love me more.
Did you work? You worked with Brutus?
I did. I worked with him at my hometown fair, and it was absolutely like a little kid's dream come true, being able to hand him the shears at ringside.
Was it when he was married to the crazy lady? Had he married the crazy lady yet?
I don't know because if she was around, she wasn't allowed into our locker room because that promotion, you know, no wives or, you know, significant others or anyone ever came into that locker room. So I have no idea. I have no idea if she was even there.
Because she is fucking nuts. I listened to her on because he did a sports radio show in Miami a couple years ago, just picking football games and stuff. And she would always be on the phone too. And she is nuts. But who are some of the other legends that you got to work with?
I got to manage Hacksaw Jim Duggan, who is also awesome. And then I've just been on a lot of shows where even if you don't get to necessarily work with people, you get to sit back and you get to talk with them. You get opportunity to interact with the legends. And, you know, if you use that time wisely, you can get a lot of really good advice, you know. Like, I got to spend a lot of time talking to Captain Lou Albano at a show before he passed, and it was like, I had tears in my eyes, because I was watching wrestling when I was, like, 4 or 5 years old, you know, and Captain Lou Albano was, like, one of the top managers at the time, and being able to talk to him about it and keeping old school managing techniques and different things alive and asking him, like, you know, what should I be doing? Do you like this? Do you like that? The same thing, you know, Paul Bearer, we got to talk to Percy Pringle at another show. Like, he was so interested to hear of young people keeping managing alive, you know, because it's almost a lost art in wrestling. You don't really see it anymore. You see valets and girlfriends. And then occasionally you see a male manager. You don't see that many people who are truly wrestling managers anymore.
Well, that for me, that's the one of the more fun parts of wrestling is the manager. It's not even the actual wrestler.
Exactly. Like, think about it this way. What would Brock Lesnar be without Paul Heyman? Brock Lesnar is so boring. Like, he is the most boring person on the planet, and Lesnar can't even be made, you know, like really less boring by Heyman anymore. Like, it's just
Heyman won't even call himself a manager. I'm an advocate. I'm not a manager.
I'm just an advocate. I'm just here because this guy told me he needs someone to speak for him. Maybe he should call himself an interpreter.
I imagine Captain Lou Albano's advice was, put a rubber band in your beard, baby.
Well, that was one of them.
I'm a woman, yeah. Captain Lou. Yeah, you're going to have to get a beard.
Get a beard. Join the
make
circus.
It in this business. That's very
well,
cool.
And you're right. Is that you always have to remember, as a manager, the focus isn't supposed to be on you. The focus is supposed to be on the person you have in the ring. And that's where a lot of these newer manager characters get lost, because they want to focus it on themselves. They want to be like Titus O'Neil brand. Yeah. They don't want to understand that the focus isn't about them, though they can play a key role without making it about them.
Who is the... Right now, who is, like, the closest to the throwback manager? Is there one in the WWE product right now? Because I'm talking, like, I mean, remember the 80s and early 90s? I mean, you had not only Bobby Heenan, you had Slick, you had Sherry.
You had Ellering for a little while, but he literally is a throwback.
Yeah, I know he's on NXT right now, but I don't.
Literally, it's a throwback, you know. So I mean, they haven't been bringing up anyone into those kind of roles.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone on the main roster who would fit that role as the classic.
It's Ellsworth. He's the closest thing to a manager.
And he just got suspended. So
got suspended. But we are helping him. Bet Wrestling has decided we are going to help him with his campaign to pay off his debt. You can buy an Ellsworth t-shirt through our site and help him pay down his $10,000 fine, so maybe he can come back after his 30 days. We don't know.
Can you tell us about Bet Wrestling? I was on it earlier, but what is it?
Well, Bet Wrestling is a website that you can look up the latest lines and odds and actually bet on WWE pay-per-views. It sounds silly, but... it's a real thing and people do it. And there's lines, like right now, the lines that are out are like UK odds that are available in limited markets. But later this week, probably Friday night or Saturday morning, they'll be out the lines for global lines. And basically they give you the odds of what the matches are going to be. And they're basically novelty bets. They're nothing that's taken super seriously. It's something that you can bet some money and possibly make some money if you think you know better than the lines are or you know better than the books are. And I put out my predictions for every pay-per-view just from my own like knowledge and my own likes. You can see I'm always like being obnoxious. My predictions this time are super obnoxious. I'm not going to lie.
You had strong opinions.
I do. I have strong opinions. You know, I've been watching it a really long time and I sit through and I watch it and I'm like, right now it feels like the writers for Raw have their heads up their ass. Like, it's just terrible. Yeah. It's just absolutely terrible. They have so much talent and they don't know how to use it. And SmackDown is like leagues better, where I'm actually enjoying watching it for the first time in years, you know? So yeah, it's
SmackDown's problem is they have too much talent. They don't even have enough time for it, because Nakamura wasn't even mentioned on SmackDown this week, was he?
I don't think so.
I don't think he was there. I don't think he was mentioned.
Well, that's one of the things that you'll notice that they've been doing lately is they're rotating out their big talent, like Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, and like anyone who has a bigger name, they're rotating them out where you're going to see them for like 2 weeks and then you might not see them for a week. You know, but you're not seeing them on TV, but they're still doing house shows. I don't know if you guys keep track of like what WWE ticket sales are like right now. But WWE does these live events where they even happen the nights of pay-per-views. They happen against Raw and SmackDown, just in different markets. And they have such a huge roster that they're able to divide their roster up and put half the roster on another card in another city and still run another live event that's just not televised. So there are dozens and dozens. We have them listed on the website as well. There's dozens and dozens of these live events that you can attend that are actually, they're almost better because they're in smaller, more intimate venues, mm-hmm. you know? So you're paying less money and you're getting a better seat, no matter what, if you're going to these small venues.
And I think they'd be more willing to try things, because it's almost like
it's an open mic. It's an open mic,
basically, yeah.
Yeah, like some of the best shows I went to for WWE were the ECW house shows, that the WWE ECW house shows that they ran back when they had taken, you know, decided to bring ECW back. And those ECW televised shows were awful. Like, I used to do a live show during it, watching it with the fans, and it was just, it was unwatchable, except for like little bits and pieces of it. But when I went to the house shows that were in the places where they originally ran, like White Plains, New York, mm-hmm. the show was off the chains. It was like unreal. It was totally not the same as the televised show. It was absolutely amazing. It was a lot of fun. And I think the little house shows are really the way to go, unless you're going to a pay-per-view.
Hang on, real quick. Yeah, when the first time I came across your website, I was like, oh, I bet this is a website that focuses on Apollo Crews, Titus O'Neil, Alicia Fox, BET
yes,
Wrestling.
BET Wrestling.
See what I did there?
I don't get it. I don't get it. No.
Must be an American.
That's what we were explaining when we were down in Orlando for WrestleMania. A lot of people were really confused and they were explaining about betting, and you can bet on wrestling, but if you go through and you follow our links, you can also bet on all sorts of other sports. And I think it's really interesting that online betting is making a big comeback right now. And it's not even just online betting. There's like all sorts of different things that you can do online that you can get better deals. Like we come up with the promo codes for your WWE shop stuff. We sell slam crates through our you know, and promote slam crates through our site as well. I think slam crates are a lot of fun. I just wish they'd make a women's t-shirt. you know, so. And then we do things like what I do. I write about like the real side of wrestling, as well as reviewing shows. We have a writer who's doing a Wrestler of the Week segment, and we're always looking for other content because we want to, you know, build some real content around wrestling that's not just, you know, just driven by your typical bros.
Bro-less comedy. That's the tagline.
I mean, it's going to be a combination of different people mm-hmm. doing work, you know, and it's like, as much as I love the Smarks and I listen to, you know, a variety of podcasts, I'll go on Twitter and I've started to make a list of all the different podcasts. So I'll listen to bits and pieces of podcasts. Sometimes I'll listen to a whole podcast, you know, and I'm like, there's a lot of content out here, you know, but all of the content out here is all written by the same people, you know. Mm-hmm. I've tried to talk to people, like, they want to see more voices out there. I've tried to talk to people about, you know, sharing what their experiences are. Ask other people about writing blogs about wrestling from their perspectives. Women who've been involved, men who've been involved, you know. It's a changing industry, and the industry really needs to keep up with the times. And you see all the companies now grasping at straws, you know, but to keep the fans really engaged, it's going to be a big shift in what you're talking about and what you're doing, you know, and to make people really believe and care again, that's a struggle.
And it's a great website, by the way, because it's a brilliant idea, because even though the creativity of the product right now is probably at a low, it's never been more popular. They put the odds and lines on ESPN when they do WWE related stuff. So like, this website is brilliant. Betting on professional wrestling.
And it's, you know, it sounds silly, but it's, you know, people bet on all sorts of silly shit every day. People bet on who's going to win the Oscars. People bet on, you know, like what if Trump's going to like start World War III with a tweet, you know, things like that. So, you know, with the way that betting has become, I'm not a betting expert. You know, that's what the other guys on the site are for. I'm more of the content, you know, content person. I'm the digital content manager. I do, you know, bringing the content to the forefront, helping promote it, you know, helping find new content creators and funny videos and things like that, I suppose. But I think the betting is a really interesting part of what wrestling has become now. And I think it could go even further in the next couple of years.
Well, you can actually do it now, like, because they offer – sometimes there's a little too obvious, but most of the time they do a good job of unpredictability, whereas, like, you know, you couldn't have this site in the mid 80s to the early 90s because, hell, Hulk Hogan would have put all your kids through college. Like, who's picking King Kong Bundy?
Right. Yeah. And that's also, you know, that's also a big part of like what we're doing today. It's like wrestling is so different. Everybody wants to have an opinion on it because, you know, smart marks, that's the whole thing, you know, or smarks, as people call them. They're always talking about how they know this, they know that, they know this, they know that, you know, so it's like, well, put your money where your mouth is. If you think you know so much, let's see what's going to happen, oh my God, you know.
Because you understand, we're actually kind of like our podcast, we're comedians who have never been in the ring, just always been fans. And that's kind of, our show makes it a point to mention that we're dumb and we don't know what we're talking about. It's just our opinion. You know, we hate the exact people you are talking about. And now I love that whenever I come across these people online, I have a place to direct them to prove me wrong.
Ask your mom for some money and go bet it.
Well, what I love about them is they're like, well, you don't know about, they're like the same thing about like people who are like into bands where they're like, you're not a fan unless you know this guy's mom's middle name and where she went to high school. And it's like, the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, just watch it. Like, shut up. You know, and it's like, just try to enjoy the show. And sometimes they'll say, yeah, like, this sucks. But like, when I talk about things that suck, it's like, it's from a perspective of someone who's been there. It's like, yeah, it's kind of annoying seeing the same move three times in a pay-per-view. Like, how many figure fours can they do as like a submission in one pay-per-view?
How many dives through the ropes are you going to have?
Yeah, you know, it's like, come on, guys. Like, that kind of shit annoys me because it's from a perspective of psychology, not, you know, it's like not from a perspective of I'm jealous of these people and I hate them. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the only
thing we feel comfortable critiquing and actually voicing a valid opinion is the comedic, like the comedy segments. Well, we have no problem dissecting those because that's, you know, the business that we feel. We know, but what is your, you've been a little critical. What is your biggest issue with the company right now?
With WWE.
With WWE.
I feel that it's spreading apart too quickly and taking on, its tentacles are going too far without really like knowing where it's going yet. And I feel like they're taking on a lot instead of just perfecting the things that they have now. Like NXT is selling out everywhere they go because they're running in small buildings like armories. 205 Live is one of my favorite things to watch. I think that is like by far some of their best programming. But I would like to see more like, and now they're doing like the female, they're going to be doing a women's division clearly based off of this, you know, new cup that they're putting out, the Mae Young classic they're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, I hope they don't overrun themselves too quickly, because it's showing already in lack of skill with things like Raw, where Raw is falling apart, but they're moving on to new ventures, you know, where they should be trying to keep their brands that are the things that bring fans in to begin with. Because if Raw is no longer interesting to people, then nobody's going to watch your other content.
Yeah, if the introduction to their product is shitty, then why check out the rest of it?
Yes. You know, and now you don't even need to have cable TV to watch wrestling anymore. Like, you can watch wrestling on Hulu, and which it's like Raw is like an hour and a half show instead of 3 hour show, but I've watched them, like both of them, and I think that the cut down version is way better, because like it's just wrestling. You know, I can't I love promos, I love silliness, but watching nonstop commercials for your products during your show is just too much.
I think they had five Samoa Joe Brock Lesnar video packages this last Monday night.
God, I'm glad I didn't have to watch them.
and those two met in a hallway for 30 seconds and never even got face to face. Yeah.
It's like,
I respect Samoa Joe for what he can do, but he's another boring guy. Like, him and Lesnar, that's like just the most boring match ever. It's like, why couldn't they make it some drama and make it him and Lesnar against and Strowman and Reigns all like a four-way match or something? That at least would have been interesting, you know, or make the long hairs versus the brutes and everybody has to work together, which would be horrifying.
Well, at least they took both aspects of boring and put them in one match, so you don't have to watch that one then. They don't spread it out.
It's funny because you have to wonder, like, from my perspective, I think it's boring, and then I talk to my other friends and they think it's boring. Like, how many wrestling fans really think it's boring? Like, you know, how many people are falling off? I watch the ratings every week are going down and down because they're, you know, granted it's summer, but they also need to be doing something to keep people interested.
I always thought summer should have been their time because, I mean, I've never understood why they want to use all these really big storylines and bring all these people back at a time period where they're competing with the NBA and the NBA playoffs, competing with Monday Night Football. June, July, August, when sports has nothing going on and it's just baseball, this should be WWE. This is when I think they should be throwing everything at it.
Yeah. You know, and that's for sure. They could be doing a lot more outdoor shows and events and places where it's not ridiculously hot. You know, and they're just, it seems like, you know, they came up with this whole great balls of fire to try to, and then the SummerSlam, like I said, they're doing these live shows and they're doing the Heat Wave Tour for SummerSlam Heat Wave Tour.
We just had that here in Indianapolis.
Not really even hyping it up, like, in any real way. Like, it seems like it's anything fun.
Mm-hmm.
They just call it the SummerSlam Heat Wave Tour, you know, and SummerSlam sold out in minutes. So that's going to be a hot time in New York City at the Barclays Center. You know, SummerSlam's always a good pay-per-view, but it's like, what are they going to do to build up, you know, towards it at this point? You know, we have two pay-per-views before SummerSlam. Frankly, I think there's way too many pay-per-views, and that's really what's burning people out.
Yeah, it's an overload of content.
They're just becoming glamorized Raw and SmackDown episodes. They're not, you know, they're not as special.
Yes. And honestly, like, I've been saying this for years, like, for probably 10 years now, I'm really sick of seeing them do the same matches over and over and over again. Like, bring back jobbers, bring back people like Ellsworth, you know, make him wrestle Cena. That's what everybody wanted to see in their poll, but they didn't, you know, they just don't think about, like, how they could be using the independent scene and bringing in these free agents here and there to, like, boost up their talent and not have these big interactions week in after week, because nobody wants to see the match that they just saw at the pay-per-view on Raw the next night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're giving it away. It's like they're doing that Kevin, the Goldberg, when he won the title, whatever, mm-hmm. They're doing that every week.
Yeah.
If Hogan, it was Hogan Goldberg. They're doing that every week. Yes. You get the same rematch. They literally, even SmackDown literally just reran the women's Money in the Bank, the entire match over again.
Yeah, they did, when you think about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How was, you know, your, Go ahead.
It's like, where are you supposed to be drawing in people if they see the same shit week after week? They're just going to get bored because it becomes stale, you know? And then it's like, it's good to have storylines, but some of this, you know, some of it is just, like, it's not catchy enough. Like, it's sad when you're one of your funniest and best storylines is, like, the fashion police and Breezango, like, being, like, you know, like dressing up and being ridiculous and being detectives or whatever. But like, why didn't they use them in that storyline? They should have like crossed them over and had them like investigating Big Cass.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have been good.
Yes! But they're missing opportunities because they don't think outside of the box. Everybody is just yes men who work for the company.
That's true. I was going to ask, I wanted to talk about, you mentioned going to WrestleMania. How was your overall experience for WrestleMania?
Oh, I loved Raw. I thought it was actually really good the day after WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. I thought it was totally worth. We actually didn't go to SmackDown. We only went to Raw after WrestleMania, even though we stayed a couple more days. But I thought the Raw after WrestleMania was like there hasn't been a Raw that was as good since. Like, all of the Raws since have been really disappointing. Because that Raw was really good. It seemed like they were coming back on a hot note, and then they just fell off.
Do you just attribute that to having to make so much content every week, or our hopes were so high?
I think they just don't know how to use the people they have. Like, Reigns, like, really pissed off everybody by beating The Undertaker. That was, like, the biggest thing ever, you know? It was, like, The Undertaker's been wrestling, like, most of our... Like, fans today, like, almost all of our entire lives has been based around The Undertaker, you know, as a main focal point in our wrestling fandom, right? And Roman Reigns beat him and came back on Raw with this, you know, really huge, like, reaction from the crowd, and then it just went nowhere. Yeah, you know, he started playing this bullshit with Strowman, and then Strowman got hurt with the ambulance, and now they're going to have another ambulance match. It's like, why are you risking your talent's health and safety for stupid storylines that nobody cares about? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't he make, like, Reigns, like, just sit out, like, even if he did nothing for, like, 2 months and just sat at ringside watching everybody and would say nothing but, I'm just scouting out the talent.
That's more interesting to me than, you know, an ambulance.
Yeah, right? You know, they didn't even have to do anything with Reigns because he just beat The Undertaker. He could sit back and look pretty for a while.
Any other thing you want to touch on? We're running out of time and we don't want to keep you over. Anything you'd like to promote or anything? Obviously, betwrestling.com.
Yeah, check out betwrestling.com. You know, we're going to be featuring a lot of content in the next couple of days. We just put up a couple of news stories today, some news. Some early lines, as I said. We also have a great event section where you can find tickets to WWE events. You can also find news on indie events. And if you want to promote anything you have coming up, let me know. It's LizSavage@betwrestling.com. You can find, you know, more information as to what's going on with pay-per-views. You can submit your reviews to whatever wrestling shows you went to or watched on TV and you want to, you know, write about. We accept all that kind of content as well. You know, and you can follow me in my little adventures on Twitter at Liz Savage. I'm on Instagram as Savage Truth TV. So, you know, and we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat as Bet Wrestling. So you can find us.
There's a video on Bet Wrestling of you opening a slam crate. So what's one of your favorite pieces of wrestling memorabilia that you own?
I have to say it's definitely the championship fanny pack that came in the slam crate. That is the funniest thing I've ever seen. When I opened that slam crate, like, I could not believe that was in, like, I was tired when I made that video, but, like, it's just, like, the most ridiculous piece of memorabilia I've ever seen. And, you know, I was just like, this is so over. This is just so ridiculous. I also like the t-shirts a lot. I think the t-shirts are nice. As I said, I wish they came in women's sizes, but what's really cool is everyone comes with a little championship belt pin. Mm-hmm. And those are really dope. I'm really digging those, you know. I don't have a lot of memorabilia, you know. My other memorabilia consists of 8x10s my friends give me.
Yeah. Big collection.
I'm not really much of a collector on my own, but to see, be able to see what the merchandise is and, you know, like, examine it, it's all high quality stuff. It's all the stuff that you would pay a lot of money from the WWE shop anyway. So the Slam Crate, as far as I'm concerned, is pretty worth it.
Yeah, it doesn't look like warehouse leftovers.
No, it's all exclusives, so you can't get them anywhere but Slam Crate. Like, last time it came with two microphone pint glasses. One has Enzo and Cass's microphone, and the other one is, like, the announcer's microphone. Mm-hmm. Those are dope.
Besides wrestling, what are you listening to or watching that you would recommend to other people? Or reading, anything like that? I sprung the question on you, but I'd like to do that, so...
Let's see. I've been watching a lot of Netflix, so I really love The Glow. I binge watched The Glow series, so if you haven't watched that, you should definitely check that out. The series they made about like what it was like for the women. It's a falsified series. They use fake names for the girls, but it was so worth watching. Like, I totally dug at that. Also on Netflix, there is a GLOW documentary that they made a few years ago about the real women of GLOW. So you should watch that as well. I definitely suggest anything done by Marvel. I'm a total nerd, and I absolutely love all of the series that are out by Marvel right now. So I've been binge watching and getting through all of that. I like Luke Cage a lot. I think it's really underrated, and I think it should have been on television, not Netflix. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of just really great science fiction kind of shows going on right now. So it's even the DC shows are pretty cool. I'm digging on The Flash and Supergirl a lot, you know?
Brad, do you have any questions?
No. Kind of okay. Put me on the spot there.
I know, but I want to make sure
you get in. No, I have a question. How come whenever you ask me what other stuff I'm doing outside of wrestling, you never mention reading?
Well,
you never asked me if I'm reading.
I don't think you read.
Okay, that's fair. Liz, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, and you know, thanks for letting me talk about the little bit of craziness that's going on in my life. And let me know when you have this up, and we're gonna get this out there.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll be later today. And you are officially friend of the show.
Right on.
Sorry, you're stuck with that. So. but thank you, so much for joining us, and you're welcome anytime. So anytime you want to come on, just let us know.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
You're fired!